Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking Bitcoin boom, tax refund robbers, and bogus bag fees.
You know what, buddy? This is our Friday flight. We're going to talk about the financial headlines that we think are most important. And right around now, in our other episodes, or at some point at the beginning, we don't do it, I guess, right at the very beginning of the episode, but that's when we introduce the beer that we're going to enjoy during the episode. We don't enjoy beers on our Friday flights. Feels like maybe one beer too many.
It's like a beer Sabbath for us.
Over the course of the week. But I wanted to mention, we, on Wednesday's episode, Graham, listener Graham, he made an amazing home brew for us. And we mentioned it, Frou Frou Gal. It's a Saison. Sort of Saison farmhouse. He emailed us, like, glad you guys enjoyed the beer. And he also pointed out that what I named the beer was a bit of a pun that I think you guys missed. Frou Frou Gal. Frugal.
Yeah.
Frugal, I guess. I don't know, but yeah,
we screwed up.
We're idiots.
And if anybody should,
I cannot believe
if
we
anybody
didn't
should
that.
Be able to spot a dad joke, it should be us.
I wanted to mention that. I was like literally laughing out loud that we completely overlooked that. But Graham, thanks again for for sending that beer our way. But yeah, real quick, we wanted to mention a quick little tip for everybody. Mint. It used to be everyone's favorite budgeting software. That's no longer the case now that they... So when did they announce that they're going to shut down? Was that
a couple months ago, three months ago maybe?
Beginning of the year or end of last year. We talked about it in depth. We've got a post up on the site of the different alternatives
that
you should be considering.
We mentioned it when it got announced, right? And because this is big news for anybody who likes free budgeting apps, because Mint was not only like the first, but it was pretty good, and it was also didn't cost you a dime. So a lot of people, that's why they were into it. And there are certainly more robust apps that cost money, but Mint was the free one. And for like frugal people, they were down with that.
For the Frou Frou gals out there.
That's right. So I was on Mint for the longest time. And so, yeah, we looked into a bunch of different budgeting apps. We kind of compiled a list of the ones that we thought were best and that we've heard from listeners, too, that they use and enjoy the most over the years. And so we'll link to that article in the show notes. But I think Monarch Money is getting rave reviews from people. YNAB has been just classically excellent for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like Copilot. The young upstart is Copilot. That's like kind
that
of
was
the,
pretty cool.
The coolest interface. Mm-hmm. If you really care about that and kind of the AI learning model that they implement, that's a neat one too.
It just seems like it works.
Yeah.
Like that it works really well. I wish I wasn't such a nerd and committed to my Excel sheets because I was literally eyeing Copilot the other day.
It's also beautiful.
And I thought, it is. Yeah. It just looks really well. It seems like it works really well. And there's a part of me that wants to try it out.
Yeah.
So maybe you can. teach an old dog new tricks. We'll see if that's the case. But we wanted to mention that because you've got just at 2 weeks before Mint officially shuts down. You've got until March 23rd for you to find an alternative. Before we actually get to the stories, though, a quick How to Money newsletter shout out. So we had a bunch of folks recommend the newsletter to some friends. So a quick shout out to Travis R. Joel, in particular. I don't think we've ever had anyone rip through the ranks so quickly. So not only did he didn't just get the newsletter shout out, he got a beer on us. He got a personal finance book. And he also got a pair of How to Money socks.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. And actually... So I dug in because I was just like, okay, wait a minute. We need to make sure that we're not getting played. I think he recommended it to not only his friends, but like all of his family members as well. There's a bunch of folks who also have the last name.
He's spreading the word.
Starts with R. But anyway, massive shout out to Travis R, but also to Samantha N and Landon M.
Yeah.
And we appreciate y'all.
Just a good reminder to everyone out there listening, sign up for the newsletter. And by the way, if you refer other people, there's prizes there for you.
Like there are perks.
Beehive, the platform we run on, keeps track of all that stuff. And we'll send you cool stuff if you refer enough people. And actually, if you get to the final prize, you get to hang out with us virtually. So
Joel, the ultimate boss.
That's right. I'm like the Bowser of Personal Finance Podcast. But let's get to the Friday Flight, the stories we found interesting this week. Let's start, Matt, by talking about cryptocurrency.
Bitcoin in particular.
I'm hearing the buzz from so many people, from not just the general internet, but from some of our more Bitcoin appreciative listeners. Yeah, the enthusiasts out there. And if you haven't been paying attention, which most people I'm sure know this, Bitcoin is, as people want, going to the moon. It's up like 200% year over year. It's making all the headlines. And I'm getting so many emails from people just like, hey, are you guys changing your tune about Bitcoin? Well, when the number goes up, I think it went up like 20% in 4 days. That's the kind of thing that grabs people's attention. And it's interesting. We'll talk about this in a second. I don't necessarily know that I've changed my tune. I think we've always been like Bitcoin minimalists, you know, not Bitcoin maximalists.
Yep.
But it's attracting a lot of eyeballs. And the question is, why is it going up? Well, I think that people would cite a couple of different things. I think one is the ability to buy Bitcoin in various ETFs. That's part of it. There's a bunch of different places now, ETFs that track the price of Bitcoin, and you can invest in those.
There's like, I think, 15 different brokerages that got approved to have spot Bitcoin ETFs.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the reasons, right? And then there's the halving event or havening event or whatever people call it, which basically it's going to reduce the amount of Bitcoin that's able to be mined. That's another factor. There's just generally more demand right now, and there's a limited supply of Bitcoin. That's kind of when it was created as there was going to be a reduction in supply over time. And then some of the investing normies are getting into it as well, right? It used to kind of be you were in the know, crypto bro, 8 years ago. You were like a first adopter. And now Fidelity is massively into this. They say, now their advice has changed too. They say Bitcoin is part of a balanced portfolio, like something in the 1% to 3% for most investors, they say makes sense.
I can get behind that.
Yeah. And then, but Vanguard, they actually still take the opposite approach. Yeah. And they say, actually, we're not even going to allow people access to Bitcoin funds at all. And it's kind of like mom and dad are fighting, Matt, because we like both Fidelity and Vanguard, and they're taking two different tacks. And some people, I think, want us to say that, or at least the Bitcoin maximalists, that people need massive exposure to Bitcoin. I still think that the boring stuff, if you're capitalizing on the boring stuff, if you're doing the target date fund or the S&P 500 index fund, and you're doing that dollar cost averaging, and that's where the bulk of your assets are, then you can own some Bitcoin to the level of, like, I don't know, maximum of 5% is typically what we say, messing around, investing in stuff like that.
That's right, which is what we've said from the beginning. It just depends on how much money you have set aside, because that can actually be a pretty substantial amount of money, depending on how much you have been able to invest over the years. And it makes me think, too, that I looked up crypto's overall global market cap, and it's something like $2 trillion. And so I thought to myself, all right, well, how does that compare to the overall U.S. stock market? And the capitalization rate there is $50 trillion. So if you do the math there, that actually falls right in line with what it is that we advise if you are taking a more indexed approach to investing, which is why I basically got into it it was literally back when we talked with Jacob Goldstein, when we talked about, he had his book, Money.
That's right.
It's like the history of money. And he was just pointing to the fact that it's a belief in something, and what better way for people to express their belief than to actually buy it? And so if people are buying it, that means they have faith in this thing. So even if you don't necessarily think it's going to completely change how it is that the world operates, if you are an index investor, that was the argument for me that won me over. And I thought, all right, well, shoot, it should probably reflect the amount of money that's out there that is invested.
I will say
that was enough to sway me.
There's still a lot of speculation in that area. And
well, especially recently, because that's why we've seen these massive gains in recent months.
The volatility is pretty crazy. And a lot of the other random crypto coins that don't have the same street cred as Bitcoin, those are popping too. And I'm not putting any money in those. I'll tell you that.
No.
I will say the other thing, nobody was emailing me about how good of a buy Bitcoin was specifically after the post Super Bowl collapse. Nobody's like, hey, how come you guys aren't buying the dip? Like everybody, for some reason, it's on everybody's radar as the price goes up. Is the price guaranteed to stay up? No, it's certainly not.
Yeah, we will see. Time will tell. We're actually going to commit a full episode to Bitcoin again with a fairly level-headed personal finance expert, but he is a bit more bullish on Bitcoin. You mentioned Fidelity, Joel. Well, it turns out 401k millionaires are through the roof. This is according to new numbers, new research that Fidelity released. 401k millionaires increased by 41% last year, which is a massive amount of folks who have a ton of money set aside in their retirement accounts. And it's not surprising, of course, given the incredible returns we saw in the market last year, even leaving crypto out of it. We saw over 20% in the S&P.
Oh, yeah.
And so the reason we bring this up, because there might be folks out there who are saying, all right, if you want to get rich, you do need to invest in crypto. And we're here to point out that those individuals are wrong.
Yeah.
Don't listen to those folks.
They want to say, guess what? If you want to build wealth, you got to do it more quickly. The 401k.
You got to take bigger risks.
The boring route's not going to get you there. And that's just not true.
And in fact, you can build up enough wealth to retire in style just via a regular plain vanilla 401k, just making those contributions to a single tax-advantaged account like that. And especially if you up your contribution percentage like clockwork, which evidently, again, according to the research, more than a quarter of folks did last year. They increased how much they were investing in the market. We love to see that.
That is the key. Regular contributions, dollar cost averaging, doing it with every paycheck, and then increasing your amount, let's say, by 1% every year. That's a recipe for success. And you will find yourself in that class of people that Fidelity says are 401k millionaires. You will get there. By the way, Matt, we are, of course, entering the silly season of politics. Super Tuesday was this past Tuesday, a bunch of primaries happening around the country. For the majority of Americans who identify as politically homeless, it's going to get real annoying. So just maybe don't watch the news as much.
Brace yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, it can be tempting to try and invest in a way that aligns with your political beliefs, or to think that the outcome of an election should change what you're invested in. But we would say investing according to your political philosophy is not a good idea. One of the realities of checks and balances in our system of government means that change is hard to come by, which is actually good if the option you don't like ends up in power. And so there are always predictions, by the way, about how the presidential outcome is going to impact the stock market. And everybody's got a theory, or even some candidates are saying, well, the reason the stock market's up is because people think I'm going to get elected, and they're excited about that, right? Well, history shows us that the person that gets elected to the highest office in the land, it's of little to no consequence from a returns standpoint. So no matter which old dude, and it's going to be an old dude, right? No matter which one of the old dudes gets elected.
Whether it's the senile old dude or the chaotic old dude.
Right, yeah. old dude is what we're getting. The recipe is the same. Don't change what you're investing in. Keep dollar cost averaging like regular. Don't let kind of the emotions of this political season impact how you sock your money away for your future and how you opt to build wealth.
That's right. Okay, speaking of the government, have you filed your taxes yet, Joel? Your personal taxes?
Not yet.
I got our corporate returns filed as of...
I'm going to give you a pound right now.
Bonk.
Thank you for doing that.
As of a couple of weeks ago.
Matt,
you also could not file your personal taxes because you needed that.
That's true.
K-1.
I'm always either filing like April 14th these days because of like last minute tax stuff coming in, or I'm filing an extension.
I've been dragging my feet as well. We've had a lot going on. But as of earlier this week, I did finally get the rest of my prep, all the forms that get sent in. I finally organized those, got all my numbers together, and sent it in to our tax professional. Hopefully, I'll get my results back. I've got my fingers crossed I'm thinking I'm going to get a decent-sized refund this year.
You're going to take me out to dinner? Barbecue?
Only the best barbecue. But, okay, so what I want to point out
then
here...
Then we're flying to Texas, I guess.
...is the fact there are a lot of folks who have attempted to file, but it's gotten rejected. The IRS has become the bearer of bad news here, and that's because their taxes have already been filed. They're basically saying your tax filing slot, I almost picture it as like a giant post office where there's like special slots with everyone's
Sorry,
name
it's
on
full.
It.
Someone yes. else did it for you already.
There's already a return sitting there. It turns out that folks are filing taxes fraudulently in order to steal your tax refund. And it's not an insignificant number of people either. Almost 300,000 folks filed a complaint that their taxes have been filed by a crook, by a scammer. And for a long time, there wasn't much that folks could do about this. They would just cross their fingers again. Yeah, just hope that you weren't the victim. But luckily, over the last few years, the IRS has implemented a solution. They've implemented these PIN codes yeah. that allow you to lock it down, ensure that you are getting your refund and not somebody else.
Yeah. What a terrifying sort of experience to go through all that work and then file your return. And then the IRS say, sorry, someone already did it for you. We've already got your return and someone made off with your refund. And basically, that's because they don't need much information on you to file a return as if they were you. They don't need all your documentation. They just need some basic information about you and they can make some stuff up.
They don't need to file accurate
right.
numbers and
no,
forms.
It's yeah. a completely inaccurate return, right? And that's how and they're able to juice that refund, run away with it, and then you aren't able to get the refund you're due for many, many, many months. You'll get it at some point, but it could take over a year in order to get that refund
back. Without a whole lot of work, too.
Yeah, so the PIN code, Matt, is the solution. It's your salvation here. And they're basically like two-factor authentication codes for your taxes, similar to when you log into your retirement accounts, right? You get the text or the email code to be able to log in. It's a significant extra step of protection, which makes it so much harder for the criminals to file taxes as if they were you and get that refund sent their way, because if they don't have the PIN, they can't file the taxes. And you can always log in to irs.gov, by the way, if you forget your PIN, and you can grab it there. But we don't want you to find out that someone stole your refund after the fact, because it becomes this part-time job to fix it. Who wants to reach out to the IRS and say, hey, guess what? I was a victim of scam. Can you help me solve this? Well, the IRS is already understaffed. They've got a lot going on, and you're going to be person number 300, and you mentioned 300,000 people, so you're going to be person number 300,001 asking for the IRS to look into this on your behalf. And so we would say set up a PIN at irs.gov. It's super easy. The IRS then will not accept a tax return from you or someone filing as if they were you if the PIN is not put in when submitted. And so
yeah, being smart when it comes to cybersecurity, like, it's only going to become more and more of a problem. I think I was recently participate in something with the school, a phishing fraud scam training program. You know, like, you sit on the computer, it's got the module, like the videos you go through and you watch it, and I thought it was going to be fairly lame. But I was actually impressed.
You learned a lot?
I really did. And specifically, lately, evidently, one of the biggest ways that a lot of folks have been targeted is via Zoom conference email invites. So basically, you receive an email that looks just like what you would normally receive from your work about a last minute, all hands sort of meeting. And so you click the link thinking, oh, man, this is urgent. Or sometimes it'll say something about, oh, pay is going to be impacted because of tough previous quarter. Let's discuss, like that kind of thing.
Got your emotions ramped up.
Exactly. Yeah. So you click the link and then all of a sudden it says, oh, you need to do a software update, which of course always actually happens with Zoom. I mean, how many times do you click that link and it prompts you to, oh, you need to update the software?
Probably 30% of the time.
Except that, boom, that's not a link that goes to Zoom's site. It's a whatever. It's something that allows somebody else to take over your computer and
like a malware link.
To monitor everything that you're doing. And that totally blew my mind. It made me, we've been talking about scams a lot recently and how they have gotten more sophisticated. So add that one to your list of things to watch out for, especially with more folks working from home, participating in virtual meetings. Yeah. I think that's one. It stood out to me as, wow, that's actually, I don't think I would find myself clicking it, but you never know.
You never know. One last thing to mention real quick on the tax front is the average tax refund, Matt, is something like $3,000. So this is a financial game changer for a lot of people when they get that tax refund. And it's just important to point out, we're not going to do like a whole episode on this or anything, but be careful what you're doing with your tax refund. This is the perfect opportunity to kind of jumpstart maybe a savings goal that you had.
Oh, yeah.
To pay down some nefarious debt that you've had lingering around. To invest more, maxing out your Roth IRA this year. There are all sorts of good things you can do with this money. Maybe take 10% of it, blow it on something fun, but this is your money. This is a forced method of savings,
yeah.
right? Like, don't treat it like it's just poof, money that showed up out of thin air.
Sure, yeah. You could spend 10% of it and still have enough money left over to get you through Money Gear number one, where you've got some margin on hand and where you can essentially pretend that that money doesn't exist. It's a cash cushion. It's an invisible floor that keeps you from falling through the next time there's a financial emergency that shows up.
And there's very few other times in our lives where we get an influx of cash that's that large. Maybe you get a bonus at work. You know, a lot of people don't. But this is the kind of thing every year, especially for middle to low income people, like this can change your financial game.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, man, we've got more to get to. We've got some travel stories, plus more. We'll get to all of that right after this.
Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, we're back. Matt, there's more Friday Flight, more financial stories we got to get to, including a new ruling from the CFPB that's apparently going to drastically reduce the negative downsides of not paying your credit card balance in full. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, let's get to our ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from Wired Magazine, and the headline reads, "Online reviews are bought and paid for. Get used to it." So I feel like we've been talking a lot about scams. We just talked about scams before the break. We talked about scams last week. This and a lot with like really, really big stakes. Losing your tax refund is one. $50,000 in a shoebox, handing that over to a scammer, that's big stakes. In contrast, fake reviews feel like small potatoes. They don't even really feel like a scam almost. But you might end up buying something that you otherwise wouldn't have because of these fake reviews, right? And I think most of us maybe have come to take internet reviews with a grain of salt at this point. You see them on Google, or you see the star rating, or you're buying something on Amazon, you also see the star rating, and maybe we're like, okay, cool, yeah, that's probably somewhere in the ballpark. But fake bots, angry competitors, And customers who get a monetary reward are all leaving reviews these days. And that's kind of skewing the system, right? It's making it hard to know how much you can trust the review that you're reading. So I think Wired is spot on here that there are more and more reviews out there. It's harder to trust the reviewing system in general. And so it's hard to trust just that general star rating. It makes me think, Matt, when you and I were in South Georgia not too long ago, we were looking at breweries to go to. One brewery was like 4.6 stars. The other brewery was 5 stars. And when we looked up the 5-star brewery's website, what did we see? We saw that the brewery was essentially...
You looked this up, yeah.
They were giving people a free beer if they'd leave a 5-star review.
Yep.
And so we ended up going to the brewery that had 4.6 stars, and I guarantee you, it was better than
the
5-star
brewery.
Because if you're going to give me a free beer, I'll leave a 5-star review, and that's gaming the system.
Especially if you've already had a beer. Like that second beer, you're like, okay, I can totally leave an excellent review for you guys.
That's like perfect evidence of kind of what's happening in the review game these days.
Well, it does make me wonder if we're guilty of gaming the system, Joel? Are we the pot calling the kettle black here?
Potentially, yeah.
Because we got a kind of funny 1-star review, maybe a hit closer to home than you and I felt comfortable with. You then posted it up on Facebook in the group, which caused some listeners to leave some nice reviews to basically counteract it. But in the past, we've given away some swag for reviews. That's not how we do things now. I do like the system.
We still will sometimes.
Well, we specifically do it with the newsletters.
Yeah.
And so like it's essentially, like we said, it's built into the newsletter system. It's like an automatic sort of referral program to reward folks who believe that it's something that's good. It's important to point out that like reviews can be helpful when it comes to figuring out what you're getting into, right? Like we definitely don't encourage folks to be dishonest with what they're saying. Like if somebody doesn't believe in our newsletter or believe in the show, then they're not gonna forward the newsletter to friends. Hopefully they're not leaving a review that's not indicative of their experience, but it's just important, especially for bigger purchases when it comes to online retail, is sort of what we're talking about here, to not just trust the star rating, but to actually read the specific reviews, because it's often not going to be too difficult to spot the fake ones or even just sort of the outlier angry folks.
Yeah.
or maybe the folks where it seems like that they are just sort of checking a box in order to receive the free product that a manufacturer said that they would send them once it's written on the little card
that comes
in the Amazon package. Fake Spot. So this is a helpful plugin. It can actually help you to identify just how bad fake reviews are for particular items on Amazon. And bottom line, it takes a little bit more time, but in a world of bought and paid for reviews, we think it's worth the effort. It's worth doing your due diligence, even with some of the smaller stuff out there, some of the smaller purchases.
And the proliferation of products that we can buy now, like reviews are almost a necessity. We rely on reviews because there's also, especially think about all the myriad websites you can buy from. There's the Chinese websites like Shein and Temu or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different suppliers on Amazon. It's not like kind of the basic brands you're used to. There's all sorts of new brands and new models of stuff. And so, yeah, the star rating is potentially helpful, but those actual specific reviews, finding the people who have actually used it and have thoughts and can tell you how long it's lasted, how long they've been using it, that is far more helpful.
And to be able to search the reviews, that's my favorite thing. Like when I'm buying something, typically when you buy something, you have a specific purpose in mind for that. I'm like, okay, I need a pair of new earbuds that will stay in my ear, right? And so when you search, like searching for reviews on wireless earbuds, search for things like run, and then boom, you've got all the reviews that where someone's mentioned that, oh, I wear these all the time when I go running, that kind of thing. I think that's can be a really helpful way when it comes to sort of sifting through some of the different reviews out there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that.
But let's talk about the airlines, Joel, because American Airlines and United, they both just raised their fee that they charge for checked bags a couple weeks ago. No surprise, now Delta has followed suit. It's now going to cost you $35 for the first one and then $45 for that second checked bag.
It's amazing how the gargantuan airlines move in lockstep, essentially.
They're just waiting on the first person to
put
their necks out there on the line.
We got your back. We're all going to do the same thing.
But the giant airlines are taking a page out of the budget airlines' books while not reducing their fares. So that's the downside here, is we're kind of getting hit on both ends of it. And so the best tip that we can offer, just pack light. Avoid checking a bag at all costs. This is where being more of a minimalist is going to seriously pay off, not only in the fact that you're not wasting money on those items to begin with. But now you don't have to pay extra money to haul all that junk with you, pairing
or,
back.
Or fly Southwest.
Or, yeah, good. Two free checked bags. That's the way to do it.
Although there were articles this week about how Southwest is also changing some of what they'll allow you to take two bags onto the flight.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got three, even if it's like a fanny pack or something, they're going to crack down on that too.
The personal item?
Yeah, the personal items.
I missed that.
So be careful on Southwest as well. Just know, two bags. Yes, you can bring two bags on, but if you're trying to bring like a little sling pack or a purse or something like that too, that's going to count as one of your bags now.
Watch out. So there's a good thing the cargo pants are back.
Yeah.
Because
they make those
stuff all your pockets.
Like fishing vest sorts of things too. Some people do. They stuff their pockets.
We talked about last year, I guess.
That's certainly one way to do it.
Also, consider getting the credit card of that specific airline, because most of those cards, they don't only give you a free checked bag for yourself, but then even for your entire party, or most of your party, for those who are flying with you as well. So yeah. I think that can be a great way to save when it comes to travel.
Yeah, if you're I gotta bring everything, then okay, cool. If you gotta bring the kitchen sink and you gotta check a bag, well, that's at least one way to avoid the escalating fees. And sometimes those fees can rival the price of a plane ticket itself, because plane tickets have gotten so dang cheap these days. And our favorite travel bag, by the way, we're not paid by Cotopaxi or anything, but man, the Cotopaxi 28-liter backpack, the clamshell opening.
Oh, it's so good.
It's the best way to travel.
You just bought Emily one for our upcoming.
Right.
So, oh man, have we talked about flying the discount airliners? We're flying Frontier on our trip here in a couple months.
Yeah.
And they charged for any bag, so you have to have a personal item, and the Cotopaxi 28-liter fits within the realm of a personal bag.
Yep. So
you don't have to pay anything, baby.
We're able to save a couple $100 on airfare, and then on top of that, we'll jump through the hoops. That's all we're gonna bring.
Yep, it's gonna be so cute. We're all gonna be matchy-matchy.
They're incredibly attractive bags, and then they just especially if you're going to a major city.
Mine's literally right here on the ground because I use it every day now. I use it as my daily commute bag because it's so freaking handy to be able to throw clothes in one section. I've got my lunch over in the other section. It's the best.
Don't want to sound overzealous, but it's a great bag.
And again, they don't sponsor the show. We just freaking love those bags.
But Cotopaxi, you could.
Hit us up.
Yep. but okay, and new stats just came out, Matt, about cheap flights and booking cheap flights from our friend Scott over at Going, which used to be called Scott's Cheap Flights. The Goldilocks window, as he called it, is right now for booking summer travel.
Ooh.
Especially if you're planning on going international. So if you want to save the most money, you might want to book real, real soon. You might be able to hold off another month or so if you're traveling domestic, because it's actually buying closer to the travel date often works out better from a domestic perspective, usually 1 to 3 months out. Shoulder season, though, is still the best time to travel if you want pretty good weather, smaller crowds, and cheaper flights and accommodations. So start looking early, set fare alerts, and pounce when you find a deal. Also, last thing, fares are likely to get cheaper on many international flights this year thanks to a rising supply of routes from the airlines. Demand, Matt, has been crushing. A lot of people want to travel. The airlines are meeting that demand with more planes, more routes. And so that means that new supply that the airlines are infusing is likely going to bring prices down this year. Lee, that's what most of the predictions are saying.
Crazy, yeah. Well, and in particular, I think I saw too that travel demand is actually down, at least in the first month or first couple months so far this year, because it takes a while to respond to that demand.
That's right.
That we did see in the previous couple of years as folks were finally wanting to get back out there. So post-pan, obviously during pandemic, no one traveled. Post-pan, everyone's like, I gotta travel.
Yeah.
And so the past 2 years has been insane.
It's like normalizing now.
It takes a while though for the airlines to respond to that demand. And now that they're responding, it's almost like they're going to be ships passing in the night, and that demand might decline as they're increasing supply. And so, dude, what if by the end of this year, they're paying you to travel?
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be very nice. Here at How to Money, we talk regularly about the importance of financial literacy. It's one of the reasons we freaking do this show, is to inform people, for folks to know how to handle their money better.
And there's a dearth, really. Like, we know most people don't know a whole lot of stuff about money. And so that's the whole point of the show, is to try to help people understand and develop confidence.
And I would say you and I are probably polar opposites on how we came to be exposed to personal finance and money, and how we've gone about learning the finer points of it. And I think our audience is likely split similarly. I think some grew up learning from a trusted adult, while others had to DIY their knowledge, often after making some mistakes themselves. Mm. Well, personal finance high school classes are now mandatory in about half of states, but it's always been difficult to figure out how much those classes are actually worth.
Yeah, like, how much of an impact do they make?
Yeah. So the good folks over at NGPF, Next Gen Personal Finance, they actually just performed a study and they determined that one semester's worth of personal finance education is evidently worth six figures. We're talking $100,000.
Dang.
Basically, covering some of the basics, learning how to avoid credit card debt, paying more attention to your credit score, understanding that you gotta spend less than what it is that you make, that added knowledge, and then just subsequent tweaks. We think that they're going to continue to have meaningful downstream effects as folks are. And it just normalizes personal finance as well, right? Because if it's something that, oh, this is something we all have a shared language about, it's then becomes something that you discuss, and the more you talk about it, the more we think that it becomes something that everyone's going to get better at, the ability to handle their money well.
And they even mentioned that there are ripple effects that they haven't quantified, right? That, like, the information that goes back to the homes that these kids come from, right? So, like, their parents are almost influenced just secondhand from what they're learning in the personal finance class in school.
I like it.
But I think here's the most important thing that really has to be thought about as we're implementing more of these courses in classrooms across the country. It's going to take some cool teachers and some outside-of-the-box ways of approaching the subject to help convey the point so that kids can understand it and make the change and for their future. The New York Post, Matt, they just wrote an article about a teacher using some unorthodox techniques to spread the good word about great money habits. She's charging her third grade kids, starting them young, which I appreciate, in her class, she's charging them rent for their desks.
Is that even legal?
I mean,
doesn't sound like it.
It probably would be illegal if it was like actually real money, but it's not. So it kind of sounds crazy. She's using fake money, though, to help teach kids about the realities of how money works. So the kids, they receive a paycheck, quote unquote paycheck, every other Friday for getting their work done. And then they have to fork over those dollars for rent if they're tardy. So, and her system even gets a little more nuanced than that. I really like what she's doing. So just massive props to Ms. Lattimore over in North Carolina. It's cool to see a teacher taking a different approach and not even wait until high school, Matt. Those little things along the way, they matter. I mean, I was having a conversation with my 10-year-old before bed last night. She's asking about stocks and she's like, can we invest in Toyota? And we're just like talking about, and then she was like, money just
Why does
like,
she want to invest in Toyota?
I don't know. She was like, that was the stock she picked for some reason. Okay. I'm like, hey, Toyota's actually a really good company that wouldn't be a bad stock to own.
We should point her to our single stock investing episode.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I'll make her listen to that one. But just a great conversation. Then she's like, wait, money seems like it's a bad thing. And then I was telling her, wait, no, before money, it was actually so much harder. You had to barter. And so money's actually a good thing. And here's how we can use money. And here's why. And so it's kicked off this great conversation. And then I'm walking her to school today. And she's like, can we talk more about stocks, Dad? It's just funny because it's not like I talk about this all the time at home. Like, sometimes I leave
the
job. I leave the job in the office. But, you know, we talk about money sometimes, and I love her curiosity, her inquisitiveness. Yeah.
But not all kids have that curiosity. And so I think, like what you said, is true. The ability for teachers to bring about wonder and to kind of anchor it and to connect it with kids and, like, what matters to them in their lives.
Yeah.
It's hugely important. And it is a big task, I think, for a lot of teachers out there. But, let's close this out with a, like, a bread and butter topic, which are credit cards and the fees that they charge. So coming soon to a credit card near you, reduced late fees. And you mentioned the CFPB. This is that story. They issued a rule and it's going to go into effect in 60 days. That's not going to allow credit card companies to charge more than an $8 late fee for paying your bill after the due date. That is a whole lot less than the current average late fee. And this surprised me. I didn't realize it was this high. Of $32. I did not realize that is the average.
This is why we always stress on time and in full.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, we hate fees. So you might be thinking that, oh, this is a story. This is something that Matt and Joel love. And the CFPB, they certainly have done some great stuff for consumers over the years. But the truth is, credit card companies will likely just raise the interest rates that they charge consumers in an effort to make up for this cap that's being placed on late fees. And I think they also might reduce the different sky-high reward offers as well as a way to make up for some of that lost income. So, like, on the surface, it seems like a good thing, but we'll see how this actually pans out.
And plus, it might not even come to fruition. There's lawsuits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I guess in theory, I hate fees. You hate fees. Seeing fees minimized is a great thing. I hate seeing those pesky baggage fees, check baggage fees, go up and up and up. And then, man, guess what? Because of that, everyone is trying to check a bag, which is the right thing to do anyway. But then the overhead bins are full and they have to gate check them anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, it's a super silly system. And granted, there's a reason to that madness. The airlines make bank on that. And the credit card companies make bank charging you late fees too. But if they get eliminated, they'll find another way to make money on our backs. Like, they're not going to just give up that profit.
And so, bottom line, if you use credit cards the way that we advocate for, you aren't paying late fees. You aren't paying interest. And so credit card interest rates, or what it is that cards are charging when it comes to late fees, that really shouldn't have an impact on you or your finances. That being said, Joel, I've got a confession to make. I had a new card a couple months ago, and I had not properly rolled it into my system of how it is I keep up with my different cards and payments and stuff. And I forgot to pay one of the cards.
So you had a late fee and interest fees, huh?
Both. And guess what?
You called.
I didn't even have to call. Mm. I just logged in, and the chat thing was there, and I said, da-da-da-da. I typed it up. I was like, hey, I just received a note, and it was there on the statement. Late fee, the interest charge, I would rather not pay that. And I pointed out the fact that I've never had a late fee, or this isn't something that I've requested before, nor is it a fee I've incurred before. Is there any possible way that you can waive it? And this isn't like a card that I've, again, this is a new card. I haven't been, you know,
I didn't have a customer for 5 years.
I had a pretty thin file. Yeah. A thin history with them. I mean, I guess like 1 month's worth. And like literally 10 seconds later, they fired back, or the bot did. I don't know who's doing it, but it was like, sure, no problem. Happy to waive that for you. Both the late fee and the interest charges were wiped from the following statement. They credited me.
That's an important thing to mention.
Oh my gosh.
I think most people think that they're stuck with it if they get billed one. And lots of times, especially if they're been a loyal customer for a while, but even in your case, like,
I was surprised that I was able to do that without, like you said, because you're like, oh, because a lot of times you do have to call, you have to pick up the phone, which is a little bit more of a hassle than what I was able to do, which was just like fire off a message, go make a coffee, come back, and boom, it's been fixed.
There you go.
So just something to keep in mind, folks.
Definitely a good tip if you accidentally incur a late fee or something like that.
Exactly. And that's one of the risks. We talk about responsible credit card usage, but even old pros like us, Joel, like,
we make mistakes.
Yeah, I mean,
especially you.
I make mistakes all the time. You play with fire enough, you might get a little singed, but the ability for there to be some ointment to kind of put on that light singe.
Ultimately,
I was back in shape, good to go in no time.
Ultimately, credit cards have been good for our finances.
Oh, yeah.
Even though some people disagree. But all right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to spring forward, change your clocks this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to daylight. Even into the late evening, that's gonna be glorious.
Well, what about the morning? See, that's the worst part, though, is because
it's
been so bright and nice in the mornings, and that's gonna get set back.
That's true. An hour. But your morning bike ride is gonna be a little darker.
Yeah,
yeah.
I do like being more visible on the roads, running into the office, riding into the office.
Just wear Christmas lights.
Yeah, I do. I got the blinkies on there. It's important.
All right, that's
stay visible, folks.
That's true. All right, well, we'll see you back here next week for more money saving information. Until then, sign up for the How to Money newsletter. Tell your friends about it so you can win some cool swag. But Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.